Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's been almost half a year since our guest today, Ted Kitchens, took over as director of Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. Kitchens came to New Hampshire from Houston, where he was general manager at the George Bush Intercontinental Airport, one of the nation's busiest and one that's seen mostly steady growth since the recession. But that's not been the case in Manchester. Our state's largest airport has seen 13 straight years of passenger decline, even as regional competitors have done well, including Logan, Portland, and TFA. Green. This hour, let's get your questions in for Director Kitchens. Do you fly out of Manchester? Why or why not? What ideas do you have about reversing the airport's longtime downward trend? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. And Director Kitchens, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Laura, and it's an honor to be here on your show, and thank you for having me.
Well, why did you choose to come from a big, busy, successful airport in Houston to a small one that's clearly struggling?
Well, I like to always answer that question because I get it often, kind of explaining my career journey in a lot of ways. I started off as a consultant to the industry after getting my master's degree from the University of Florida, and I started a family and did a lot of consulting work up here in New England throughout the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but also up in Vermont, and fell in love with New England at a very early point in my career for all the reasons that we all love New England. And started the family, and the consulting gig was not too conducive to the family life, and decided to get into airport management. And I talked to my wife and told her, look, we have to get up to New England at some point in my career, because it's just everything that I saw and wanted in a place to grow a family. And jobs kind of opened up, and I moved around with different people I worked with that had changed their positions, and they wanted me to come along and work for them in their various organizations. But when this opportunity presented itself, I jumped at it, and I went back to my wife and said, remember the conversation we had 20 years ago? She said, not really.
So it took a while, but yeah.
It took a while, but this was really an airport that I looked at very, very early in my career. And, because it's known as such a well-run and well-maintained airport throughout the industry, and is held in high regard for those reasons.
Well, and I definitely want to dig in with you on that 13-year decline in passenger numbers. But first, you worked, as I said, at George Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston, I think the nation's eighth busiest or something like that.
I think it's the 15th, yep.
So what was that like? That's a very big, busy place.
It is, and it was challenging, particularly the time that I was managing that airport through several events that were of significant scale, namely, two historic floods, one called Hurricane Harvey, and managing the facility through that, and all the devastation that we saw in Houston, and really turning that airport from just a airport for commercial service into really a focus point for relief efforts in the region, because we were having troubles with Hobby Airport, which is a part of the Houston Airport system, and also with Ellington Airport taking on water, but Bush stayed dry for the most part. So we were really the focus point for a lot of the relief efforts coming into the region. But then, you know, we had other things like, you know, the Super Bowl, the infamous, you know, New England Patriots Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl was there in Houston. So managing through that, and at the same time, we had, you know, some significant protests going on at the airport because at that time was the Trump travel ban was in place. So everybody took advantage of the fact that the world's media was right there on our doorstep because of the Super Bowl coverage. So it was very challenging, but it was very rewarding at the same time.
Wow. So you had to deal with First Amendment issues and
absolutely
politics and
absolutely
all that. What does that mean as the airport director when you are the focal point, as you said, for managing hurricane relief efforts?
Well, I mean, a lot of it was coordinating with our federal emergency relief partners. you know, and the hard thing in any emergency situation is resources come at you really fast and from all different directions. And you really have to control how those resources are coming to you and what their capabilities are and make certain that you're coordinating those efforts with, you know, the incident commander and other folks that are on the ground and make certain you're getting the right resources at the right time to the right people to help them.
So you're getting overwhelmed.
Well, that's in a lot of ways, yes. It is a danger. And that's something that any emergency manager will speak to is sometimes you get too many resources and you aren't deploying them in the most efficient way.
Well, let's talk about Manchester because yes. I've got several emails already racked up.
I'm sure
you
do.
I know people will want to talk to you, Director Kitchens. Our number here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Today in The Exchange, we are sitting down with Ted Kitchens. He's the director of New Hampshire's largest airport, the Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. And as he told us, he's been on the job since last fall. He came to Manchester from Houston Intercontinental Airport. Again, we want your questions, your experiences, what would make Manchester Airport even better for you. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email, Director Kitchens, that came in before the show. This is from Susan in Durham. And thank you, Susan. She says, the Manchester Airport is wonderfully convenient, and I always look into flight options from Manchester. Unfortunately, there is not much that is direct from Manchester for the flights we want to take, and the ticket price has also been considerably higher than the price out of Boston. Director Kitchens, I am sure you hear this all the time. I love Manchester. It's small. It's convenient. The parking is easy, but it's just not cheap enough.
Yeah, I do hear that a lot. I'll answer it with an average, but I know averages can sometimes be misleading. But on average, our ticket fares are about $36 round trip, you know, plus government taxes, so about $45 total more expensive than Boston. But if you look at the same carriers that we have here and look at those same carriers at Logan, so United, American, Southwest, and Delta, our fares are actually very competitive to Boston. I think what a lot of people perceive as not having enough low fare options is because we may be booking a little too close. And let me kind of explain that to you. Most carriers put their seats into fare buckets, and they're usually about 10% of the seats in each fare bucket. So if we have a 70-seat regional jet and the lowest fare is at the 10% fare bucket, well, you only have 7 seats available at that fare price. But at Logan, if you're dealing with a 150-seat A319, you have 15 seats available. So the perception is that there's more lower fares to be had out of Logan than there are out of Manchester. But we do offer those fares in the market. So people just have to book early and book often. We can't wait till the last 2 weeks or 1 week out and expect to find that low fare, because it may be gone already out of the market at that point.
So smaller planes and fewer planes means a smaller percentage of
Correct.
Those low-fare seats.
Right. I mean, it's never a percentage. It's always what are you applying the percentage to, right? I mean, if you have $1 and I give you another dollar, you're 100% richer, but it doesn't mean much.
As Susan says also, unfortunately, there is not much that is direct from Manchester,
right.
She says. And that's another complaint that I'm sure you hear all the time.
Right. And, you know, our job, our function as an airport in the national airspace system is to get people to the hubs. We're a spoke city. We're not a hub city. Logan does offer more direct flights, but I challenge everybody to think that your first flight is really in your car. Your first connection is in your car to Logan. Over half of our connecting options out of Manchester Boston Regional Airport are less than 90 minutes, which is going to be the same 90 minutes that you use or spend in getting to Boston, be it by the car or by a bus to get to Logan. So I would challenge everybody to think, my first flight is really in my car to Logan.
How well is that argument going over? I've heard you make that before.
Yeah, I see light bulbs go off whenever I mention it. people don't really realize that they're spending, what would be a connection time in connecting or driving to Boston. So I would much rather spend that 90 minutes in BWI or any of our connecting airports, Detroit, Charlotte. Those are great airports to connect through and have a much more relaxing experience than sitting there on 93.
All right. Well, I want to ask you about public transportation in just a moment, but lots more emails, Director Kitchens, and calls. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Karen in Hooksett emails, I know this is really with the airlines, but can you encourage them, such as Delta, to better post their flights? For example, Karen says, there's only one flight each day to and from New York City, LaGuardia. However, when I'm at the airport early in the morning, I sometimes see an incoming Delta flight from LaGuardia around noon. I would love that flight, but I never see it on the Delta website or the schedule. I'm not sure if you can address that specific question about Karen's flight, but I do wonder about the posting of flights that she mentions.
Well, yeah, I'll take a look into that specific issue that Karen mentions. But the posting of flights as far as for sale or their availability, I'm a little confused by the question. But.
Well, and I wonder how much of some of these issues that you face, Director Kitchens, are about the airlines and the choices that they make.
Sure. And the carriers will match the capacity into the demand that they see in the market. And these are highly mobile assets. I mean, that's what an airplane is. It takes off, multiple times a day. And if they don't see the type of return that they want to see out of the market, then they're going to use that asset somewhere else. I mean, airports are all fighting for the same airplane, and we're all fighting for the same capacity because the airlines have changed their business model significantly over the last 15 years to where they are really focused on the capacity that they're placing into their markets. And they don't fly a fly it and they will come type mentality. If the service is not there to support the or if the demand's not there to support the service, they're going to move that aircraft out to some other airport that has the demand for that service. And so that's just the airlines being very rational in how they are deploying their very expensive assets.
When people blame the airlines for a lack of more regular flights, cheaper flights, more direct flights out of Manchester, how accurate is that, Director Kitchens, to say, hey, airlines, give us a little bit more here in Manchester?
Well, I mean, I think some of it is accurate, but it's not that easy. And one of my favorite lines that I'm using around the state is you get the service and you keep the service that you support. Let's unpack that a little bit. You get the service that you support. And in order for us to get more service, we have to be able to show to the carriers that the local market is supporting the airport to the maximum extent that it can. And if we can't show that, then the conversation doesn't get off first base because the carriers will say, I'm picking up the same passengers out of Logan for zero cost. So why should I come and lease space in your airport, tie up an expensive asset flying into your airport, hire staff? There are all these costs that come along. These are tens of millions of dollars worth of decisions that these network planners are making on the behalf of the carrier. Why should I do all that if I'm getting the very same demand out of Boston for nothing?
From your state.
From your state. So that's a hard argument for anybody to overcome and to turn on the airline. So we have to begin by showing that support of the airport first. Right now, 80% of the demand in the region is leaking to Logan. And as I mentioned in several interviews, I don't anticipate that, or I'm not naive enough to think that we can get that down to 0%. But if we can get it from 80 to 70 or 60, then I can go back to the carriers and say, we're holding on to that demand. We're doing a better job of supporting the airport that we have. And they'll start seeing it in their numbers of, you know, because they know everything about you. They know your zip code. You give it to them when you book. You probably have a credit card of theirs in your wallet somewhere. So they know a lot about you, more than we would ever know as an airport. So and more than we should ever know as an airport, I should say. But you know so they have mountains of data when we just have, you know, little granules of data. So they'll see those trends occurring pretty early if we are better supporting the airport.
So you're saying, Director Kitchens, when people complain that there aren't great flights out of Manchester, either they're not direct or they're more expensive, you would say don't blame Manchester Airport, and frankly, don't blame the airlines. Look at yourself and the choices that you're making.
I think there's some truth in that. But, I mean, there's some things that we could do better as an airport as well. I mean, we need to do a better job of telling the carriers, and we've started this, about all the wonderful things that are going on in this market and all the wonderful economic development trends that are going on, you know, the positive increase in our per capita income and our population base and our disposable income, you know, the knowledge economy that we have here in the southern part of the state. All these are wonderful things that the carriers may not have fully appreciated in the past, but we're bringing that information to light when we sit down with the network planner, saying this is a place that you need to be running to, because we have a lot of the same trends that are going on that are very, very positive that are associated with, you know, other areas that have boomed in their air service, like Austin, Texas, or Nashville. I'm not saying that we're going to get to that size, but we have the same ingredients in place that those airports had. So we need to get the carriers to view us differently and reframe the argument to our benefit. And I think that's something that we're working on. And so there's some truth, though, that you do have to look at yourself and look at yourself, your own travel behavior, and saying, am I doing really everything I can do to support the airport?
Okay, I have a couple more questions for you on that, but let's go to our listeners. And again, you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And in Derry, Robert is calling, Director Kitchens. Hi, Robert, you're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me. I love the show.
Good.
I just want to get back to, again, a point that was raised in the first email and a comment that was just made. I actually do sort of blame the airlines a little bit. I think part of the problem is an outcome of the whole hub system that was set up in the last, I don't know, 20 or 30 years, in that, you know, I love Manchester Airport. I have been using it for decades. I will use it whenever I can, but it comes down to if I can get to where I'm going from Logan on a direct flight versus Manchester making, you know, connection somewhere to hub, I will unfortunately choose the direct flight because of all of the issues that all the potential travel disruptions that come into play when you're changing planes somewhere. You know, the delays, the one flight coming in late, missing a connection. So I don't see where it's something that you know, it's not obviously not something Manchester can control.
But direct is important to you, Robert, and I appreciate that. And Director Kitchens, after a short break, we should talk about that a little bit more. I understand that you said the first 90 minutes in your car, consider that also a leg of your flight. But Robert's right. I have been stuck myself at connections, missed a family reunion one year because of that and so forth. So it can take a long time to get somewhere if something happens in that connecting airport. So, Robert, we will talk about that after a short break. And if you're on the line, stay there. We will be right back. Our number, 1-800-892-6477.
Dedicated listener Joanne Harden of Rye has included NHPR in her will and trust.
It may not be the biggest trust, but I want to be able to pay back what I feel I've received so the people coming after me will be able to enjoy that.
Leaving a gift to NHPR is an inspired way to support an organization that has enriched your life and that of others in your community. To learn more about including NHPR in your estate plans, go to nhpr.giftplans.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with Ted Kitchens, director of Manchester Airport. He's been in that position for about half a year. Mr. Kitchens came to New Hampshire from Houston Intercontinental Airport, one of the nation's busiest. Now he hopes to boost passenger growth at Manchester, which has been declining for 13 years. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Director Kitchens, just before the break, we took a call from Robert in Derry, and Robert, thank you very much, who said, love Manchester, fly out of there when I can, but he really wants to fly direct. And speaking of someone who travels a fair bit myself, I understand I have missed more than one important event or gotten really delayed and held up by something that happens in that transition point.
Right, and that's the reality of air travel in some ways. Airlines have gotten a lot better about their on-time arrival and on-time performance. The hubs that we connect into right now, absent of something like a Newark, which we're about to change over to Dulles here next week, which is a lot better of a functioning hub, have very high on-time connection banks. So the carriers are doing a lot better job of matching that. Of optimizing their schedule to ensure that, your connections are smoother. But you're always going to have, a weather delay or something to that effect, at some point along your journey. So, or somewhere in the United States. So hopefully it's not where you're trying to connect. But, I like to take a quick moment and say, if you look at other airports that are similarly situated as Manchester, look at Providence. That's our twin, right? I mean, the same distance to Logan as we are. We're leaking 80%, as I mentioned. Providence is only leaking 55% to Logan. So the great folks in the state of Rhode Island understand that their time is worth something. You look at Colorado Springs, which is only 90 minutes from a large connecting hub for United Airlines at Denver. They don't leak at nearly as high. We have about 0.6 employments per capita here at Manchester.
What does that mean?
Employments is a passenger getting on board an aircraft. So for every one person in the region, we can anticipate about 0.6 here at Manchester. At Providence, it's about 1.1.
It's a lot more.
It is. Twice.
It's almost double, yeah.
In Colorado Springs, it's 1.3. Eugene, Oregon, which is two hours from PDX, which is the same type of airport as Logan. It's not a connecting hub per se, like Atlanta or Denver or Chicago O'Hare, where you have big network connections. But it's a large hub, meaning which is an FAA definition, meaning it can get you practically anywhere you want to in the United States nonstop. But they have close to 1.8 employments per capita. So those communities have all understood and come to an understanding that their time is worth something, and supporting that local airport is worth something. I grew up in Gainesville, Florida. It used to leak like a sieve to Orlando, Tampa, and Jacksonville, but they've done a great job, and the community's done a great job of rallying around that airport and are supporting that airport a lot more now than it used to when I was growing up in that community, because they realized getting down to Orlando or getting down to Tampa is a very difficult thing for them to do, and it's just not worth it. I think this is a manifestation also of just the structural changes that the airlines have undergone in the last 15 years.
To David's question about
flights. Right. And it used to be that airports and communities our size would have an airline that would come and support secondary markets. It was forever and a day Southwest Airlines. Southwest Airlines
in Manchester
now, yeah, and or even in small communities around the United States. I'm talking more on a macro level now, not just Manchester.
I see.
They would come in to serve the secondary markets, or it was AirTran before Southwest bought them. So now we live in a world where 90% of available seat miles, which is a measurement of capacity that airlines use, are controlled by four carriers. And that is, of course, the big four, you know, United, American, Delta, and Southwest, which we have at the airport. And we're very blessed as a community to have an airport that has all four major carriers. So we have a high concentration of capacity being controlled by four carriers. So your JetBlues, your Spirits, your Allegiants, your Frontiers, Alaska's, Hawaii's, other airlines of the world are all represent only 10% of the available capacity in the nation. So they're all fighting for a very small piece of the pie. So I think as the carriers were allowed to merge and consolidate, and we saw, you know, the likes of Continental and Northwest and U.S. Airways, AirTran, all disappear from the competitive landscape. It created these voids in these large hubs, and so the Spirit Airlines, when they were growing, grew into those large hubs instead of into the secondary markets where they normally would have gone in a more competitive environment. So I think it's not just a Manchester thing. This has been something that has hurt small communities across the country.
That's interesting. So as the industry itself consolidates, you have fewer players and they are making choices to maximize their profits at these really big airports where they are guaranteed to fill up the plane.
Yeah.
Whereas when there were many more smaller players, there was some more interesting business choices made, and that was an advantage.
And the capacity was constrained at those large hub airports. I mean, I use this example. You know, if it took American Airlines 15 gates to run their flights or their schedule at Logan, and it took U.S. Airways 10 gates to run that schedule, the combined new American after they bought you know, U.S. Airways was not going to take 25 gates. They're going to take 20, which now opened up five gates for some carrier like Spirit or JetBlue or Frontier to backfill for $0. I mean, there was no capital in Logan. Massport liked it because they didn't have to build the capacity and incur debt and all these other things. So it was a win-win. So it created a vacuum in which these carriers that would normally go to smaller markets, they found the opportunity, and the business metrics were very favorable on their part too, because in an oligopoly, which is essentially what the airline industry is, you have, you know, some pricing power, and so these low cost carriers and ultra low cost carriers can come in very substantially beneath the market fare and make a pretty good margin.
Well, I have a lot more questions for you about TF Green and other competitors, including Logan, Portland. But I want to share you with our listeners, Director Kitchen. So let's go back to our callers. And Sherry's calling from Dover. Hi, Sherry. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Sherry.
I would love more than anything for the airport in Manchester to coordinate transportation with the C&J Transportation Group. They are the only reason that we leak to Boston. We love Manchester. I'm actually flying out in a week to Manchester because from Manchester. We love Manchester Airport. It's so wonderfully easy to get to and park and so friendly. But having that extra transportation choice would be fantastic. Most of my family, unfortunately, flies into Logan so they could hop on the bus, so we don't have to go and pick them up. It's really significant. And if you could conjure up some way to get that business out in your direction, we'd be going to Manchester even more.
Well, Sherry, I'm so glad you called because this is a really important issue. We've heard from a couple other listeners as well. Ginny in Laconia emailed. She says the bus service needs to be enhanced in order to bring those north of Manchester to the airport. From the North Country, one can get a bus to Concord and one to Logan, but to fly out of Manchester, there is no public transportation to the airport from the bus terminal. Ginny also wants to know, do you have any plans to investigate options like enticing the bus companies to provide a bus or shuttle to Manchester Airport? Ginny also says this would encourage the likelihood of more residents of New Hampshire to use our local airport. Angie emailed, by the way, we live 90 minutes north of Manchester. We love flying in and out of there. It's so easy. Parking is more affordable than Boston. Flights through Boston can be cheaper, Angie says, but I tell friends that it needs to be a $200 difference, wow, to get me to consider going to Boston. Thank you, Ginny and Angie, and to you as well, Sherry. Let's talk about the public transportation issue.
Well, first, Sherry, I appreciate your business, so thank you very much for choosing Manchester. That is certainly on our radar. Increasing the mass transit or the public transit options to the airport is something that is certainly going to be an item that we look into. It's not easy to change, those type of agreements with the state. I've talked to Commissioner Sheehan about this several times, and
transportation
exactly. And so it's something that we're going to investigate. We used to have an east-west bus service. My staff tells me this, and it got like two riders a day. It just was not very feasible for us to continue that type of service. But I challenged my staff by saying, "Well, times are different. Maybe attitudes are different."
Instead of saying it didn't work last
exactly.
time, so why should we bother?
Right. So it's something that we're going to investigate going forward, because I think it is something that is important. We would like to turn the airport almost into a regional transportation node in a lot of ways.
Are you talking to CNJ or Concord Trailways or Peter Pan or any of those bus companies?
Not yet. We're trying to figure out exactly who is taking the bus. We're about to do a bus ridership survey, so anybody who's riding the bus, please participate in that. So we're trying to figure out who those passengers are and why they're choosing to go to Logan. And what airline are they flying? Where are they heading to? And we're also asking for your zip code. And that's an important thing for us to find out what your zip code is, because one of the things that we've gotten smart on is exactly where we are leaking from. We know our top 35 zip codes now in New Hampshire that are leaking to Boston Logan. So we would like to try to map that data back to those leaking zip codes, and then we can maybe. Reach out to those consumers a little bit better.
How significant a factor is that in this leakage that you talk about, Director Kitchens, the fact that you pretty much have to drive to Manchester?
I'm hearing it more, which has given me the belief that attitudes have changed, and maybe it's something that is worth exploring more in depth.
Numerous emails have come in on this topic, so I won't read all of them, but thank you to folks for raising that. And that's showing us that this is an important topic.
I mean,
for
example, one of our top 35 zip codes that we're leaking from is up in the Upper Valley.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I've got an email here from Cara in New London who says...
I'm not reading your screen.
Yeah, no, he is not. The director may not be able to address this, however. What about transportation to the airport, such as the Dartmouth Coach? Cara says, I live in New London, and it's extremely convenient to park and ride rather than drive, even to Manchester. Can the airport help drive changes in local mass transit? Cara, I have taken that Dartmouth Coach bus as well to Logan at one point, and I shouldn't admit this to you, but I take the... bus all the time to Logan Airport, too, because it is so easy and convenient. And I don't have to think about parking or driving or anything. Michael in Nashua asks, how much would passenger rail affect demand and usage at Manchester Airport? Thank you for that, Michael. What about that, Director Kitchens? Passenger rail, what are you discussing?
Right. Well, that's a great unknown in a lot of ways. I'm have publicly supported the rail study. I think there are very... good economic development reasons that the region should look into this, and the airport is a byproduct of economic development. We're a facilitator of economic development, but we also are a beneficiary of that, in the sense that if we can have businesses grow, we can have the population grow, then there's more people within the 20 miles or 30 miles that live within the airport, and so that should generate into some additional demand per our earlier discussion about the employments per capita. I think there's some legitimate benefits with rail, but rail goes both ways. So we have to be cognizant of how this may make it easier for people to get to Logan from southern New Hampshire. I don't have a connectivity problem, other than the fact that I don't have the mass transit options. But the road system supporting the airport, the Ray Resort Drive, all those things are. It's really easy to get to the airport in your vehicle.
Or in a bus, as some of our listeners
seem
to want.
So there may be some modal choices that we can introduce to the consumers, so that we can match the consumer tastes. But at the same time, if you look at most of the funding that we get, it's based on congestion mitigation. We don't have a congestion problem getting to the airport.
Getting to Manchester Airport.
Right, correct.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Wayne is in Sunapee. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
And yes, good morning. I wanted to make a couple of points. Everything that's been said so far from a guy that travels a fair amount is true in terms of the logistics and definitely need to be looked at. But one thing I haven't heard yet is, for years as I've been flying, my saying has been, if you're flying into Manchester, you know you're going to get in if there's bad weather. And I think that Manchester does have a competitive advantage when it comes to weather. It just seems like flights still land in Manchester when Boston is canceling a considerable amount of flights getting in there. And I used to fly a lot out of New York, and if I'd come out of Boston, even though I live in New Hampshire, if I could get into Manchester, I would take that and get out and get the car later because I knew I could get home to Manchester. So I just wanted to make that point that I think the grounds crew up there does a great job, and that may be a competitive advantage to bring to the airlines.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call, Wayne. Dr. Kitchens, go ahead and address that, and then I have another question for you.
Sure. And thank you, Wayne, for that observation. And you're right. The competitive advantage is my team. It is a wonderful team. An airport director couldn't ask for a better team than what I have at the airport right now. It's a little-known fact that we haven't closed the airfield due to snow in 29 years. That team takes offense when there's snow on the pavement. And that's a direct quote from one of my team members when I sat down and did a one-on-one interview with everybody. He says, we take an offense if there's a snowflake on the airfield. So they do a wonderful job, both the airfield and the landside crew that are taking care of the roadways and the parking area. It is a competitive advantage. And we have actually very good approaches, too. Our technology from an approach capability, meaning the technology that we have on the airfield, is something that's very unique to an airport our size. We can practically land in 00, meaning no visibility conditions at the airport. And that's a great advantage that we do have. That rivals, you know, the approach capabilities of the larger airports.
So as Wayne says, that's a competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. You're obviously agreeing. How can an airport director politely try to sway an airline's decision-making process about expanding the number of flights, Director Kitchens? Do you ever do this yourself here in Manchester or in Houston or other airports you've worked at? Have you sat down with these airlines and said, look, I know we don't have the bodies right now, but if you come, we will provide them?
Sure, yeah, and that is the first half of our presentation to all the carriers. We have really beefed up that front part of the presentation, which is outlining the community and all those positive things I mentioned earlier that are happening here to try to change that mindset that they have of Northern New England or of New Hampshire to one that is a vibrant, growing community.
What is the mindset?
Well, I think a lot of them, it's first of all, they don't know where Manchester is in some ways. I mean, they think we're 100 miles away from Boston when we're not. I remember saying to one, we're no further away from Boston than Providence is. And they were like, really? I thought you guys were about 100 miles away. So I think that because these network planners have 200 cities, 300 cities to worry about in the network. And they don't know, they don't have the time or the bandwidth to know what's going on in each of those cities. So, yeah, we certainly do. And then those conversations about having the bodies, and I can talk more about this after the break, but, you look at American Airlines. American Airlines is growing their capacity in the market, meaning they're bringing more flights in and more seats. And guess what? Their market share is increasing. So one of the things that we say to the carriers, it's not a demand issue, it's a capacity issue here in the market. So that is a little bit of a flight and they will come, but I know that people don't like going to Boston and playing in the worst traffic in the United States.
We will pick that up after a short break. Thank you for the call, Wayne. You can join us as well, 1-800-892-6477.
We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Deb Turner, NHPR's Vice President for Development. Thanks if you contributed during the recent fundraising campaign on NHPR. Thousands of listeners generously gave in support of credible, accurate news coverage. Your support is critical in order for NHPR to thrive with independence and stability. If you didn't have a chance to contribute, there's still time to join us. Make a simple gift of support. Keep NHPR strong for you and future generations. Go to nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, Jeff Myers, head of New Hampshire's Health and Human Services Department, is here. Send us your questions in advance for the commissioner if you'd like. It's exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. This hour, we're sitting down with Manchester Airport Director Ted Kitchens and hearing from you, your ideas about the airport specifically and about airport management in general. Your comments and questions are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org, or use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Director Kitchens, just before the break, you were talking about the conversations that you as airport director try to have with the airlines to say, yes, we don't have the population that Boston has, but we do have a lot of people who are very interested in flying out of this airport. Give us a chance. Put your airline here. Give us a little bit more on what those conversations are like.
Yeah, and those are certainly conversations that have to continue because, I mean, these decisions are not made easily. For example, you know, one of the markets that we talked to a certain carrier about would on an annualized basis represent $50 million of investment by that carrier into the airport.
So it's a big decision.
It's
for
a very
them to
big
make.
Decision. You know, and this flight and they will come type decision making is what got the airlines into Chapter 11 and Chapter 7 back in, you know, the early 2000s. I like to say that during the period of mergers and acquisitions that occurred between 2005 and 2013, the airlines went in as barnstormers and they came out as businessmen, or business people, I should say. You know, they are very smart now, much more smart, about how they deploy that capacity. So they're not going to make these decisions on a whim. They're not going to make these decisions overnight. And they're not going to make these decisions without having demonstrative proof that the market is there. Which is why I do bring up American Airlines, which is kind of a little bit avant-garde and crazy, but I've been called that many times in my life, you know, when I'm talking to these other carriers by saying, look what's happening here. Now, when a carrier like American is adding that capacity and the market share is increasing, that tells me people want to fly the product and want to fly the airport. So that's a very positive story for us to tell. But at the end of the day, we have to meet the airline's strategy. And
you have to have the numbers. They are looking at the data.
And their overall corporate strategy. Like Southwest right now is focused 100% on Hawaii. And they've just took a pretty big hit with the 737 MAX 8s being grounded. That's 30 aircraft out of their 600 or 700 airplanes that they have. Plus their normal maintenance checks and everything else. They're losing 10% of their capacity right now. They're 10% of their capacity on a national level is sitting on the sidelines. So they're focused on making Hawaii work, but now they just have this problem that with this aircraft type that is not allowing them to utilize all their assets. So JetBlue is focused 100% on Boston and Delta is focused 100% on Boston. Both of those are having a big knockdown, drag out fight in Logan right now.
Don't you feel like saying, come up here?
I do.
Rather than duking it out in Boston, one of you just get out of the ring and come to Manchester.
And that's what we say in polite ways, but yes.
Let's go back to our listeners. Director Kitchens, so much to talk about. Bill joins us from Woodstock, Vermont. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm a frequent user of Manchester Airport. I've noticed just by the parking situation, I surmised that demand was down. And I attributed this to Southwest going into Boston. Is that not true?
Is it mostly the Southwest effect? People used to talk a lot about this, Director Kitchens.
Yeah, that has certainly been a large driver of it. But also, you're looking on at Delta with their focus on Boston right now. So it's a combination of a lot of things. But yes, we were the beneficiaries of Southwest coming into the market, but we were also on the backside of that deal as well.
Yeah. Did you have another question, Bill? Okay. I think he was just asking about Southwest.
I want to say thank you, Bill, for your business as well. So appreciate it very much.
And people did used to talk about the Southwest effect. And then when Southwest cut way back, people said Southwest giveth and Southwest taketh away. Are you in conversations with Southwest about giveth again?
Yes. Yeah, we are. We're talking to anybody who would listen to us. but certainly Southwest, we're talking to them about service enhancements and also new opportunities out of the market. But again, it's got to fit the corporate strategy for Southwest. And right now, unfortunately, none of New England, because Southwest is pulling capacity out of Manchester, pulling capacity out of Boston, they're pulling capacity out of Providence. They're slight increase in Portland, but that's more because of a change in the aircraft types than it is a service enhancement. So I think they're seeing this fight between JetBlue and Boston. They're like, you know, we're going to pull back a little bit from New England because we don't want to be caught up in that tussle that's going on between those two carriers in Boston.
I have to ask you about TF Green in Rhode Island. You mentioned earlier that TF Green, similar size, maybe a little bit bigger. I looked at some of the numbers. They seem to be doing quite well. What is TF Green doing that Manchester isn't doing? Again, 13 straight years of decline here in Manchester.
Well, I think to our earlier point, number one, the community is supporting that airport. There are zip codes that will, when you look at the zip code level, there are communities that are, their airport of choice is PVD over Boston. I don't see that when I look at the zip codes around Manchester. Boston wins every single one of them. So I think that's number one. And then the carriers are reacting to that. They're adding that capacity in, and that brings more options and more choices, which means the community, you know, it's a chicken and the egg.
Yeah, virtuous cycle is, or a downward spiral.
Right, but we need an omelet right now, right? I mean, that's everybody's hungry for an omelet. So, you know, but the first step is got to be, you know, the community stepping up to support that. But I think, you know, another thing that Providence has done really well, they've incentivized their carriers. You know, they put marketing money on the table. They've offered, you know, waivers of landing fees and terminal rents. These are all things that airports can do to help incentivize, you know, carriers to make a investment into the community.
So they've made it a little cheaper to work out of TF Green.
Correct.
By just some of those fees that airports typically demand of carriers.
Correct.
Can you do that in Manchester?
Yes, we can. And we have on an ad hoc basis in the past, but we haven't had a standing program. A lot of times, you know, carriers are out there, you know, just searching and pinging your website, and we don't have anything on our website that says, yeah, we have incentive money available. So that's something that we're looking at doing.
Let's go back to our listeners, and Sue is calling in from Lee. Hi, Sue. You're on the exchange. Welcome. Sue, go ahead. You're on the air. All right. I hope Sue calls back. An email came in from David in Manchester. He says, given that parking lot D is rarely, if ever, open, wouldn't it stimulate more business if we offered free parking? David says, what is there to lose? We did get a couple people asking about parking. I wonder what you think, Director Kitchens, especially, again, since you're facing 13 years of straight decline in passenger traffic at Manchester.
Well, we are
free parking. Why not?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we can go free because parking is going to be the largest source of our debt service going forward for the next 6 to 10 years. So we have a certain amount of debt that we have to service off of the revenue we do get off of our parking. But we are looking at our parking rates. Our deck is not utilized as much as we would like to see it being utilized. We have ample long-term parking in Lot C. The reason Lot D was not used or has not been used in a while is because that was an overflow parking for the heyday of Southwest, just like Lot F, you know, off of Ray Resort Drive, and, you know, Lot G down by, you know, the approach to Runway 35 and Pettingill area. So all those were overflow parking for you know, to meet the demand associated with Southwest, but that demand is not there. So we're not going to incur, you know, any costs associated with shuttle bus operations or the technology that needs to go out to, you know, have ticket spitters and, you know, credit card readers and all these other things and the staffing associated with the cashiers. If we're not going to be able to service our debt that is on the parking deck right now.
Well, and I remember the big expansion at Manchester Airport 10, 15 years ago. You correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So now you're dealing with all those stranded costs.
Yes.
There was a huge expansion 15 years ago. Then Southwest pulled out. You're still stuck with all this infrastructure that at some level you have to pay for.
Yeah, we do.
So there you are.
That the bondholders expect us to pay it. We have $135 million in outstanding debt right now, which is incredibly high for an airport our size. That is the number one driver to our high costs that we pass along to the carriers. It is the debt service profile that we have. The good thing is in 10 years, we defease that. We're looking at restructuring that debt to maybe lower our annual debt service. But four out of every $10 in our operating budget is going to pay the credit card bill.
Wow.
And that's high.
So once you manage that debt, you can lower some of those fees and say to the airlines, come to Manchester. It's cheaper than it used to be. I think I read somewhere, Director Kitchens, that you also had an idea about leasing some extra space at Manchester and looking at that as a source of cash.
Correct. We have a right around 130 acres spread about the airport campus that we can lease. And every time that we can lease some of that land, it goes as a credit against the cost that we pass to the carrier. So that can help lower the what we call in the airline industry or airport industry the cost per employment, which is the amount that we charge the airlines for all of their terminal rentals and landing fees and just their share of the operating costs. And right now, our cost per employment is the same as Boston and Providence, and that just can't be. Because if it costs the same amount of money for an airline to pull up at the gate at Manchester or pull up at the gate at Boston, guess where they're going to go?
Boston, because it has more people.
It has more people. And they can compete against their competitors in that market. Like if it's JetBlue or Delta, they're going to put that aircraft in Boston so they can compete against JetBlue.
Let's take another call, Director Kitchens. This is Mickey in Townsend, Massachusetts. Hi, Mickey. Go ahead. You're in the air. Welcome.
Thank you. I was thinking about wondering whether or not it might make sense to add international travel directly from Manchester simply to attract the amount of people that might be very interested in not having to go to Boston. I'm one of those. I'm tired of driving 2.5 hours to get to Boston because of traffic.
Sure. Thank you.
But anyway, it was a question simply because there might be more people in this area or even the surrounding 50 miles around Manchester or so that might be particularly interested in doing something like that. I had to ask. Thank you.
Mickey, thank you very much. And I had a similar thought when I flew to Canada a couple years ago and I thought, all right, I'm driving south an hour and a half just to get on a plane to fly north. It didn't seem very efficient.
Right. And international certainly on our strategic roadmap. To answer Mickey's question, having a true international airport requires a significant investment in building something called a federal inspection station, which is where customs is. So that's going to and the U.S. government pays precisely $0.00 for the development of that facility, including down to the Cat 6 wiring for the computers. Everything comes out of the airport's pocket. I built one of these at Newport News, and it costs about $5 million. So at Manchester, it's probably going to cost somewhere close to 10 if you think about inflation and just the facility footprint. But that doesn't mean that we can't go after what's called pre-cleared destinations or pre-cleared airports, things like Toronto or Aruba or Cancun, or even Shannon, Ireland, which are, you clear customs there before you get on the aircraft. And when you arrive at your destination, you're no different than a domestic arriving passenger. So I don't need to build those facilities because those facilities are at the point of departure. So we are looking at, those pre-cleared destinations, particularly in Canada and in the Caribbean as potential options for us. And in our incentives, we are actually incentivizing the carriers to those markets.
That's interesting. And here we are late March in New Hampshire. So the word Aruba has my interest up. That would be interesting. Back to our listeners.
I'm not saying it could happen.
Yeah. Don't buy my tickets yet. No. Here's a question from Stephen in Sanborn. And I like this one, Stephen. He says, please explain how New Hampshire residents benefit from a busier Manchester airport. Stephen says, flying out of Manchester is more convenient and less stressful than flying out of Logan. If more people use the airport, the less convenient and more hectic the experience becomes, right? What do you think?
I couldn't have said it any better, Stephen. Certainly, we do lose as a state, and we lose in several different ways. Number one, the economic impact that the airport has on the state has decreased from about $1.2 billion to last time, that was about in 2005 timeframe, to around $800 million in 2009, and I would surmise a guess that we're probably somewhere around $700 million in economic impact right now. So, you know, that's close to $500 million a year that the state is losing in economic impact. So, of course, those dollars don't churn in the local economy, which means people aren't buying as much in the local economy, which means tax revenues are dampened a little bit. You know, so there are ramifications, negative ramifications associated with that. But we also lose out in a more tangible way in the airport world, because a lot of our funding is based that we receive from the federal government, or even our local sources of funding, are based on passenger traffic. So the monies that New Hampshire are due underneath what's called the Airport Improvement Program, which is a capital development source of funds that the FAA has to dole out, is based on a passenger formula. So for every passenger less that we get, we're losing, you know, development dollars. Which
so
means,
there's those numbers again.
Exactly. And we also lose out on local sources of funds called passenger facility charges. So when you buy a ticket at Manchester, $4.50 goes on top of the ticket. We get about $4.38 after the carriers, you know, take their 12 cents for handling the money. And that is money that is to be used for the capital development and operation of the airport. For us, we use it to pay down the debt. So it's used as an offset to the cost that we pass to the carriers. So we lose $4.38 on that end as well. So for every time a passenger makes that decision to go across the state line, you're actually sending $10, you know, to Massport instead of to the state.
Well, to that point, Jim in Concord writes, isn't the issue of supporting the airlines a chicken and egg issue? Jim says if there were more flights to choose from, there might be more support from the public. And Jim, I understand what you're saying.
Yes. But again, I go back to some other communities. We've all faced this, but other communities are stepping up and supporting that airport.
Such as Providence.
Such as Providence and Colorado Springs and Eugene, even Gainesville. I mean, my little airport in Gainesville, all they have is Delta Airlines to Atlanta and American Airlines to Charlotte and Miami. But they're supporting the airport, you know, wonderfully there. So it is a chicken and the egg. And put it in a game theory, it's a prisoner's dilemma is really what we're in, if you think about it in a game theory.
Well, there's a lot more we could have talked about, Director Kitchens. Someone wanted to know about Hartford Airport, what you think about that. We won't have time to get to that, but you'll have to come back.
Absolutely.
Because this has been really interesting.
I had a blast. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. That's Ted Kitchens. Again, he's director of Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. The conversation always continues online, on Facebook, and on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips, and Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.